to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two games and tell you what's cool about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
I'm Gary Butterfield.
And I'm Dennis Furia.
And this week we're bringing you Sir You Are Being Hunted and Eldric. And we'll go ahead and go straight into Sir You Are Being Hunted. We have Dennis on from The Level. He's going to serve as our resident expert on this game since he's played quite a bit more than we have. And so Sir You Are Being Hunted is a open world survival stealth game with heavy roguelike elements, developed by a company called themselves Big Robot, and it's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And Dennis, why don't you go ahead and get us started? Let us know what you think is cool about Sir You Are Being Hunted.
Yeah, I bought this game as a curiosity, and it really surprised me with how much I liked it. The biggest unique thing is that a lot of things are labeled survival horror, when really they're more kind of resource management horror, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this game is the closest that I've seen to truly, truly a survival game. So you called it open world, and that's absolutely right. It is a, you know, you're on islands, but they're big islands. There's a lot of space. So your choices, you know, aren't always just go straight through. You can actually say, hey, I'll walk over to the horizon where there's a field and just, you know, stay away from an enemy simply through the use of distance and space. Also, you know, in this world, there's, you know, flocks of birds. They're starting to add animals roaming around. So there's a little bit of hunting, but also, you know, if you startle a flock of birds, that's going to tell your enemies, you know, where you are. And you also, legitimately have trouble just staying alive. So yeah. regardless of actually needing to get the, I guess the basic premise of the game is, you're in some sort of experiment that's gone wrong. It's launched you through either time or space into an archipelago, I think it's called, a set of islands.
Yes.
Populated by robots that are hunting you for sport, and you need to regather pieces of the machine, whatever put you here in the first place, to escape. So apart from just finding the pieces of the machine, you also have to find, you know, food. And that's actually a large portion of your time,
yeah,
is just scavenging around, which is a really horrible sell line for the game. Like that totally undersells what makes the game great. But the fact that you actually do have to be concerned about these things, in that it is so survival oriented in the survival horror space, I think makes it really special. The other thing that I think makes it really special, is that, you know, we talk about a lot of games as disempowerment fantasies. And I think this game, is truly, truly a disempowerment game.
Yeah.
In a way that a lot of others aren't really. So we'll talk about Eldric in a bit, and it's a great game. But at no point in Eldric was I like, well, I'm simply not equipped to deal with this. I want to do something, but I'm going to have to come back later because I'm simply not able to. Whereas in Sir You Are Being Hunted, you'll come across situations where you see your objective, and you kind of see how you would get there. But either you don't have the resources, that you need to distract the robots that are guarding the fragments that you're trying to collect. Or, you know, you're running low on health, so you better go eat something before you try this. Or any one of a million other things. I guess the way to describe it is I would imagine my character either blubbering loudly or quietly in about 90% of Sir You Are Being Hunted.
Yeah.
Just, you know, weeping silently to himself as he creeps through the underbrush.
As he starves at a rate no man has ever starved before.
You like, starve in about, you know, 12 hours.
Yeah, you starve so quickly. No matter, you can eat like a bunch of hams.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to do too much for you.
So it's worth noting that this game is currently as an early access game. So it isn't complete. But
yeah.
I do think like what it hits so perfectly on is like the actual feeling of being in pursuit that isn't done as well, I think, in nearly any other game. Like, you're just on this island. There's nothing else here except things that want to kill you and are smart. Like, it's not just like, you know, wildlife or something that if you impede their territory, they're going to come after you. No, there's things actively seeking you out, and that's their only goal. And that sounds like every other game that's ever been, but it really hits some feeling that other games don't in that you know, pursuant.
Well, it's because your only vocabulary that you have is how to get away or how to hide.
Yeah.
You know, for so much of the game, like that's true in lots of games. Everything wants to kill you, but you know, you're armed and you are trying to kill them, but killing them is not your goal. So it's an adversarial relationship, but you will make a lot of progress through this game and should make a lot of progress through this game without fighting or, you know, being directly opposed to these robots. Like, you just need to avoid them. And, by playing up that stealth element, I think is where it kind of gets that strength. The it's good to mention that it's an alpha. Like, there's a lot of things playing this game. Like, I felt there are a lot of things I wanted from it that I wanted to do, you know, that it hasn't quite done it. Like, I'm not totally sold on the inventory in the game. Like, you get a lot of junk items, and like, why can I throw a bottle for a distraction, but I can't throw a candlestick for a distraction? Right. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, you know, that was frustrating to me. I've never successfully fought, even when I've had weapons. Like, you know, to be fair, like, I've never found a shotgun. I've only found axes and rocks. But times where I've gotten cornered and everything, I've just gotten so wiped out so quickly, which is an advantage. But if you're going, you know, I like that, the idea that you're that helpless. But if you're going to give me elements to fight back, I feel like they should have some kind of efficacy. And that might be something they're going to add in when they add in hunting and like wildlife and stuff. You know, maybe this axe would be good on a rabbit and it won't be good on a robot.
Right.
And then I guess the other, like, just big thing on the wish list, and I wonder what you guys would think about this, but I think I talked to it about Dennis on Bonfireside Chat a little bit, but I want interiors for the buildings.
Yeah. Pretty it's kind of crazy that they're all just chests. Like, it's a it's a big building, but you can only access them by the door, and then they're just a loot box.
Yeah, I thought about that after we talked about it, and I agree with you, but I think it's going to need some work on the AI, because, like I mentioned, kind of what works really well in this game is open world stealth, that the kind of scale that you're doing stealth on is I'm going to cross, you know, 300 yards away versus here, or, you know, it's in kind of football fields, whereas you could have a really interesting stealth environment inside a house. But it almost have to be a different style of play where, you know, you're sneaking kind of your more traditional Sam Fisher stay behind the counter type of deal.
What I had the vision of, and I don't, you know, I don't want to be prescriptive to a developer because I have no idea how hard anything is to implement. Yeah. I would love it if robots couldn't go into the house, but if they knew you were there, they would set us on fire. Like, that sounds like the most fun thing to me in the world. Like, you're on the second floor, they set the house on fire, like, you start filling up with smoke, and you have to, like, dive out a window.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Like, I thought that would be awesome. Like, they just smoke you out, you know? Mm-hmm. And that way, you know, maybe they can't go in there, maybe the doors are too small for them, because you make them a little taller or something like that, I don't know.
Well, the other option that would work is if they're, like, really small interiors. I don't know if either of you guys have ever played DayZ, but in that game, it's actually a big problem if you're in an interior, because you don't have the space to maneuver around your enemies. So, you know, having them in, if they find out that you're there, they just stay at the, you know, they block the entrance, you have nowhere to go, they're just going to starve you out if you don't leave, basically. I think interiors could work. It doesn't need to be a huge overhaul to AI or to game mechanics to allow that to happen. The fire idea is really great, though.
Yeah, that could be really cool. And that actually, fire is one of the cool things. Right now they just have fireplaces, which, you will occasionally find raw meat on downed enemies, or if you kill an animal, you can get raw meat, but you can't eat it. So you have to light a fire to cook it. But a fire is going to bring every robot from, you know, hundreds of yards around running towards you. Which is actually, it makes this great thing, because, like, I need food, I'm going to light the fire, and then I'm going to run like hell.
Yeah.
And hope it's not towards a robot, because, you know, 90% of the time you're near a robot. But you can also use it as a distraction technique. So if there's a fragment nearby, just lighting the fire for the hell of it and then sneaking around as they all rush towards the fire can work really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really, and like, the idea that you're really trying to fake a presence somewhere, you know, in anything you do. So, like, you're knocking things over, you're making noise in one place and kind of doing that misdirection, as if they're there. Like, it speaks to a very specific level of AI where they're not, you know, they're not zombies. So they're not, you know, mindlessly walking towards you, but they're also not detectives. you know, so they're just smart enough to be interesting, but not so smart as to be, you know, impossible to overcome because there are so many of them. They're so better armed. And like I said, I've never successfully faced off against any of them. So
yeah,
I have a feeling that the fact that they're robots is not purely an aesthetical reason, because that's they act like robots. I mean, they're AI programmed and they're not intelligent humans that can figure out, you know, track your footprints everywhere and all this stuff. They just operate on their, you know, whatever they're offering.
Like a video game.
Yeah, they operate like a video game.
At the same time, I would say this stealth respects my intelligence a lot more than other stealth games do, because I think the classic example we use is from Dishonored, where you can throw a grenade and the person runs over and is like, something happened, must have been a rat, and walks away, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas here, they're actually fairly persistent, and, you know, if they kind of hear you in a direction, they will move towards you and scout thoroughly. So it's not like they'll just move to your last known location and then sit there and then turn around. They're very persistent.
Yeah, they're incredibly persistent and really hard to, like, dodge once they get on you. It's like, you know, we said it's a big open world thing. That's the extent of it. It's huge open fields. There's very little, like, cover and ways to juke out someone who's, like, on you.
Yeah,
like I respect that as a design choice. Like, I like that as an idea. However, I think that it, from a like a moment to moment gameplay situation, I found myself frustrated by it from time to time. Where, like, if I'm working on a campaign to get to some kind of resource, the margin for error is so small because they are so thorough. Like, if you get spotted, then that's more or less like that's dead to you. You know, that area is like more, you know, unless you can really do like a pretty serious campaign of distraction to like get in and get out, which was difficult, you know. Like, once they're alerted, they're really alerted. So I feel like there's, you know, it's possible that some of that, like, I would like to see like a little bit tweaked too, you know, and they'll probably do that as they add more elements to the game, like kind of increase some of your vocabulary for that kind of thing. But I found myself a little bit frustrated where I would get to something, you know, okay, I need to come back and it's crawling with robots. Okay, how do I approach this? And then if they just happen to see you when you're setting up a distraction, then, well, this like whole area of the map is more or less Robot City now, and I just have to start over somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it's like, I understand like that nod towards realism, but it's also a little bit like a nod away from, like kind of player satisfying gameplay.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a handheld, but I think that there maybe the truth is somewhere in between.
It might need a little bit of a like Hail Mary option for those times. Like, maybe you have once per area or like once per stone that you're collecting or whatever, you have the ability to go invisible for a few seconds or something of that sort. Like, just some real big, okay, I'm totally screwed. I have one way to get out of here. Otherwise, right now, it's just if you get caught up in that area where they're all on you, that's pretty much game over. Like, you can try and outrun it for the next 5 minutes, but eventually they're going to take enough pot shots at you, and you're going to be, your time's going to be spent too much not scavenging that.
Yeah, or you're going to bleed to death. Like, because you can't, you know, if you get shot, then you're automatically, you're already under a constant death sentence,
right?
And then you're under two at that point as soon as you get shot. So it's like, it's just a little bit, like, I like the idea of an unforgiving game. Like, it's maybe a little bit too unforgiving. What I was thinking of would be distractions that work with a greater kind of radius, you know, like, what if in one settlement I've kind of ruined that area by fucking up, and I could go and set off like an alarm in another town or something, like, like just something that would maybe draw them from a longer distance in a direction, so I can kind of clear out an area without, you know, just kind of being perma screwed, not permanently screwed, but screwed for the time being.
Yeah.
And they're working to rectify that. Cause for example, like the alarm clock, now you can set how long until it goes off.
That's nice.
Meaning that you're a little bit better able to leave it somewhere, work your way around, and then have them run the opposite direction.
Yeah. That would be a big help.
A lot of the items, you kind of mentioned this earlier, not in these words, but a lot of the items are kind of self-defeating in a way. The one thing I love is, one thing I found was an old trumpet.
Yeah.
Which you can play the trumpet and, you know, that gets them headed towards you. But what did you just accomplish? You told them exactly where you were, and it's not like you can suddenly, or I very few times could, you know, move quickly enough.
Yeah. The scale is so big. If you were going to try to circle around to where they were, you have to make such a wide berth. You know, like that idea, that open worldness, kind of like looking at things in terms of football fields, means that, you know, in order to make a wide enough circle that they're not going to see you after you blow the trumpet, you have to, you know, it's going to take a couple minutes, you know, and by that point, they'll probably have lost interest and left, or they're going to catch you when you're trying to circle around.
Yeah. So, which it is, I like this idea of like stealth in football fields. It is a legitimate strategy to lead them on like a wild goose chase, to like, here I am, and then run in the opposite direction, do a big circle around so that they're still chasing you. You're leading them on, and you can kind of circle back around to the fragment, grab it, and then get the hell out of there. But like you said, you do run the risk of getting hit hard enough that you bleed, and then that's just a downward spiral.
Do you know, Dennis, you spend more time with this than we do. Mm-hmm. Are there a finite number of robots on the island? Do they spawn from a point? Is it something where like, if you do manage to have a victory against one of these roving bands of robots, like, have you made the game easier for yourself, or is it just going to rebalance itself immediately?
No, that I know of, I've never seen a robot respawn or like a spawn point. There's a finite number, and if you theoretically could just kill everyone and have your run of the place. It'd be very difficult, but you could theoretically do that.
Yeah, they probably balance the resources, so you can't quite do that. But I just want to know you know, ever worth like taking the offensive or not.
Yeah. With all of your six rounds of ammunition that you find in the game.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you could use, they just made the axe more powerful, which they said, they actually said in the video introducing the patch, like, hey, we think this might be too powerful. We might make it a breakable item, which I, after going in and being like, oh, sweet, I found an axe, I'm a god now. And it still, again, with the items being self-defeating, just got me killed more often than it helped me.
Right.
Because what the guy would do is he'd just run backwards as I ran after him with the axe, and would just shoot me running backwards and laugh at me, which made me feel bad.
It's like he's playing Serious Sam. And
the Charger bomb guys.
Yeah.
I think just one last thing, or maybe one of many things. I don't know how long you guys want to talk about it. One other thing that makes the game very unique is I feel like in most stealth games, the developers kind of have an idea for how they would like you to solve the puzzle, or at least, you know, they give you three or four avenues to solve a situation. Whereas in Sir, You Are Being Hunted, it being procedurally generated, there's truly no right answer. And I guess conversely, no wrong answer, but the game is hard enough that there are a lot of wrong answers.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's not like, okay, well, there's a catwalk up there that the developer put, so I know that'll work. Or, you know, this guard is going to stare into a corner, you know, for long enough for me to kill him. You just kind of have to wing it every single time.
Yeah. There's nothing's outright scripted as far as how they're going to be looking, where they're going to be going, how you can access the items you need to get. It's all like you said, purely roguelike randomized. And
mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's interesting too, because it's like I can see, like I like the idea of that. It's also, since you're not like looking at patrol routes and stuff, it's kind of two different approaches to stealth. Like this is one where it is kind of rapid assessment and improvisation, as opposed to, you know, the alternative, which is like in a Splinter Cell or a traditional stealth game or a Thief, it's about planning.
Yeah, mapped out routes.
Which is also like a fun thing. Like, okay, I know the guard is going to take his break at this time. I have like a brief window to cross the hallway and then get over into this closet before the, you know, dowager comes in. Like, that can be fun too, you know, but it's interesting. It feels like there aren't a lot of games that have taken the other kind of route for it, you know? So it is interesting to see a different approach on something that is typically, you know, kind of done the same way, you know, every time more or less.
Yeah, and you mentioned patrol routes, just so people know. They don't give the robots patrol routes. They know you need the fragments, so they basically camp out on the fragments.
Yeah.
Again, kind of respecting your intelligence. Like, hey, we know you need these, so we're just kind of wait for you to come get it.
And
very
camp out
rarely,
in the towns, too.
Yeah, camp out in like the towns where the resources are. Yep.
Yeah.
Very rarely have I gotten a fragment and gotten away completely clean with them never actually seeing me. Like, it almost always involves some running and blubbering on my part.
Yeah.
Yep. And you said, I when we talked about it on the other thing, you talked about how the fragments get smaller, which I think is a big deal. Like, I want those to be smaller. I like the idea that you have to make the sacrifice between your inventory and what you actually need to do. But if you're going to make me starve that quickly, and you're going to make me bleed that easily. Like, I need to have space, a little bit more space.
Yeah, so. I will say that hunting and so the playthrough of the game that I actually won, I never actually found a weapon. So I was about to say hunting could make that helpful, because if you can kill a pheasant, that's like six pieces of food that fully restore your vitality right there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they will add a system that that will help with some of that hunger stuff. Like, your first goal in a game will be to find and kill a pheasant. And then you can kind of go on, because you'll have your rations set for a while. Whereas now it's just constantly scrounging for that next little bit of food. But I don't know how they'll do that without more often giving you a weapon, which, again, doesn't happen very often. So it'll be interesting to see how they balance it.
Mm-hmm.
The big kind of concession they do make is that it's not a true roguelike, in that when you die, you die. It's got very clear save points, and you can come back to those as often as you want. So they're fixed save points. You can't save wherever you want, but you will have save games that you can reload from.
Yeah. Did you play Don't Starve, Dennis?
I did not. I was very interested in it.
That's probably, I mean, it's very different than this, but that's probably the closest thing this reminded me to. And that you have, you know, you are literally starving to death, and you're not being hunted in it. There are hostile entities, but, and it's a little bit more crafting based, but that's what this reminded me of, at least a little bit, as far as stuff I've played.
The end goal of Don't Starve is to, now we're going to do another episode. The end goal of Don't Starve is to kind of get to a sustainable lifestyle, right? Like, you can eventually get a farm going and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's not the case here. I guess it's just the having the hunger clock and having to, you know, that idea, like when you said your first goal is going to be to get a peasant. That reminds me of Don't Starve, where it's like, okay, before
you
do anything.
You should need a peasant. That would be very bad.
Yeah,
oh, a peasant.
It's not that bad. Yeah.
that, I was playing as the robot, so I've got the cheat code. So that's what I want to do.
Sir, you are being hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys. Do we have any wrap-up stuff on Sir, You're Being Hunted? I recommend it now, or do you think people should wait for it to get a little bit further in its cycle?
That's like, would you have recommended Minecraft when it was in its very early alpha phase? Like, I think there's enough of a fun game there to go in and enjoy now. Enjoy it for what it is, in that, hey, this is going to be super difficult. It's very different than anything else you've seen, and it will get more polished over time. But I think it's worth seeing now, just to get in early.
I think if you check it out now and can realize that what you don't like about it just boils down to some annoyances, then it's likely, you know, give it some time and it'll be what you're looking for. But the core gameplay and the like core main elements are already there and well established, so you'll know if you enjoy it or not your first playthrough.
Do we know if there's a demo for it?
I'm actually not sure.
Not off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, I would want...
Seems like a hard game to demo.
For like a $20 game, I want there to be a demo for it before I would say, like, go for it now in alpha.
Yeah, but given that you can spend, like you said, you know, 5 minutes at a time just kind of hiding in underbrush, creeping forward.
Yeah.
It's a hard game to, like, here's the meatiest bits.
Well, when if I were going to do a demo, it would be like one island or something like that. Like one island with three fragments. So, like, you know, like just make it a smaller version of the you know, the kind of the same experience, like, rather than a timed... thing, but the I feel like, I mean, I'm a little on the, like, I like it, I want to see some of these changes before I can see myself coming back to it and playing it more. So I guess if the three of us doing our Siskel and Ebert and Roper at the end, I'm gonna give it a wait, but I want to see where it goes. So
sure,
yeah,
very fair.
Cool. All
right, guys, with that, let's go ahead and go into Eldritch, which is another horror game, another one with heavy roguelike elements, also available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And this one's developed by, actually, I don't know. Minor Key Games, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mainly made by David Pittman, who came from 2K Marin, where he was working on like the AI for Bioshock 2 and the AI for... the Bureau, XCOM, Declassified, and stuff, and splintered off and made this on his own. So, so Gary, why don't you go ahead and give us lead in as to what's cool about Eldritch?
Yeah. So Eldritch is a rogue-inspired first-person kind of stealth exploration game. You have the ability to fight but it's not necessarily the best idea. Inspired by the works of H.P. Lovecraft. The strongest out of all the different genre that this can be, like, kind of mixes and matches, like, the strongest thing I think it is a horror game. And it has a, like, a lo-fi, you know, a little bit Minecraft-y aesthetic to it, which when I first saw previews for it, I thought would kind of detract from the horror, and then that has not turned out to be the case. What's cool about it, I think, is that it actually, you know, successfully scared me quite a bit. Like, there's a real palpable sense of dread in this game. Down primarily, like, my favorite thing about it is the audio design in it. They do a really neat thing where usually in a stealth game, you know, because you can't just see everything, you know, you're playing from a first person perspective, you can't see where the enemy is. Unless it's Metal Gear, you can't see where they're looking. You use your other senses. So you have, you know, you're listening for guards and you're, or, you know, but in this game, everything is at the same volume, kind of regardless of how far away from you it is. Which means that not only can you not rely on your ears, but your ears are actually going to ruin you in this mm-hmm. game. Like, the enemies will make an audio cue if they see you, so that's important to listen for. But you have this, especially if you're playing with headphones, of constantly being surrounded by kind of like gibbering monsters.
Yeah.
When, you know, mm-hmm. whether you are or not. And it makes it, you know, tons of jumps of, like, coming around the corner and just seeing a pretty, you know, dorky looking cultist just go, whoa, like, you know, make his stupid little cultist is, but I would get this huge jump because I didn't have any idea they were there, and then would have to, you know, the shit out of dodge, or deal with him, you know, if I had the ability to do so.
I really liked this game so far. I'm going to be probably putting a lot more time into this. But I feel like the roguelike elements shine really strong. Like, it feels like a first person version of a NetHacker Rogue, just with the Lovecraft theme and big horror elements to it.
With instead of there being such an emphasis on different items, there's something I didn't notice until the second or third playthrough is how awesomely mobile you are in this game.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you can do these running slides, you can ledge up onto things, you know, and it was awesome because the game never told me, like, you know, you're a poor expert. I just had to get away from things. Like, I think the first time I stole from a shopper, I was, you know, running away from them and, you know, ended up, like, running and then hitting duck, like, thinking I would just stop and crawl like you do in every other video game, and slid under this thing, and it was great. I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, that's really fun.
It is pretty impressive. So, fun.
If you read the tutorial books in the library, it tells you that you can do the power slide. So
reading is for nerds.
Yeah,
throw that out there.
But yeah, you do, especially, like, you master your moveset too. Because early in the game, like, you're constantly around ledges and drops and everything like that. And I found myself moving very slowly and being very worried at the beginning. And then as I kind of got more comfortable with the moveset, I'd be able to make jumps that I would be afraid of at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of rewards you and kind of you get better as you explore them.
Yeah. And the game, like, ran, like, the difficulty is not an even ramp by any means, but the first world is really easy. So the first world, you can spend a lot of time learning this. Like, I was still very hesitant when I first started playing it, but now if I go back and do the first world, to, you know, just to kind of get items for the second world or third world, it is, you know, it's more or less a breeze. Mm-hmm. So they really kind of ease you in. And then the second world and third world, I think, is where it really kind of starts showing its, you know, you have to be a lot more thoughtful and adapt and a little bit more agile to survive.
Yeah, it's worth noting that when you unlock the new worlds, you can go straight to those worlds. But like Gary said, like, jumping straight into one is damn near impossible. Like, I start at the first world every time just because going in blind into the second world, I can't deal. I need something because
the compass.
Yeah, the compass and keys. Like, keys, yeah. You know, in the first world, you're going to come out of it with, like, six keys. And the second world, like, I'll maybe find one or two in the whole thing.
Yeah. So what kind of loadouts, to call it that? You can have a hand item, a backpack item, a boot item, two weapons, and a magic power. What do you guys usually try to go for?
I've only had a few playthroughs, but I think my best so far has just been the knife and gun in my hands, and my magic was teleport. That was helping me out a ton.
The teleport's huge. That's really? Really, really good. Yeah. That's how I got past the end of the second world, which like, we'll talk about that specific scenario in the spoiler space, but that's so fucking hard. Like it's randomized, but the ends of the worlds are actually set in stone.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like boss encounters in a way.
And literally they're set in stone.
Yeah. Yes. The end of the second world is so fucking hard. And I tried it, a dozen times until I eventually came upon it with teleport and was able to get through with the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
So, I like teleport a lot, and I like double jump a lot.
Double jump was really helpful too. Yeah.
Oh, I see. I used knock.
Oh, that's good.
And
I don't
know if
I've gotten knock.
What's that?
I don't know if I've gotten knock. Which one's that?
It unlocks doors, which means you get to go everywhere. You never have to worry about keys. Which
nice.
Like Gary said, that's one of the main reasons you play early parts of the game is to kind of grind up enough keys to be able to get through the later parts. And so knock was huge. We should mention that you don't really have control over what powers you get when.
Yeah.
Right.
So you pray to these different deities. Like in each world is named after a Lovecraft god, and you pray to a statue of kind of a representation. It's the same statue each time, I think. I don't think it's specific to the world.
No, it's not. And it's not specific to the power
either. Yeah. And you get a random, well, the descriptor is like, you know what power you're getting before you grab it, because it'll say like sturdy statue or unstable statue or something like that.
Oh, no. Wait. Yeah. How do you read the descriptor?
When it's in front of you, when it prompts you to press F. Like the name of the thing in front of you will be like sturdy statue, unstable statue, swift statue, something like that.
I do not know how I missed that.
But you don't always get a power either. Like you have to find these, and later on in the game, they are better guarded than they are earlier on. Like if you find one in the second world, like it'll be hard to get to, or at least behind a couple locked doors. Same thing with weapons and items. The interesting thing about this that's contrary to a popular roguelike is there are only a few different items that you can
that's
get.
True.
So it's like a knife, which is a better melee attack, a rock, which is a reusable range attack that you have to collect.
They can also fuck you over at close range.
Which will bounce off an enemy and kill you. You can hit yourself with a rock.
Or I've killed myself just discarding it. Like I threw the rock onto the shelf because I was picking up a knife and it bounced off the wall and back.
It's like, well, fuck. Yeah. Bottle, which is like a one-use rock, and then dynamite, which is one of my favorite items in the game.
That's
because if you know where you need to go, you can tunnel. Like this game has destructible environments. So you can, there's a power that lets your bullets shoot through walls, or you can use dynamite. And if like you're sick of, you know, navigating something, if you have the compass and can tell where your goal is, you can literally just blow a hole through the floor and make a beeline for it.
Have you guys ever played with anything other than the compass? Because I have not found anything nearly worth replacing the compass for.
The time I beat the second world, I still haven't beaten the third world yet. But the time I beat the second world, I had the thing that halved my magic cost. And I was like just teleporting like mad, so I could go somewhere, explore a little bit, and then get out of there really quick. The compass is great though. Like I wish that you could have two set, you know, like a magic affecting item and the compass, because the compass seems like it's probably the best thing. So
especially if you want to play through to grind up levels. Like I could see maybe. I don't know. I'm pretty addicted to the compass, but I could see maybe like using it in the early levels of the game, just so you can know where all the right stuff is.
Yeah.
Quickly, and then discard it for something more powerful or having an effect on your magic for the final world.
When Dennis says grind up levels, you don't gain levels in the game.
Grind through a dungeon to get keys.
Right.
Yeah.
To get keys and
artifacts.
And powers.
Yep.
Yep.
Which the artifacts is essentially your money, and that's the one thing that you can put in a chest that carries over between games.
Yeah, yep. It's your money and your MP. So you have this like little cost benefit. Even though like I very rarely buy things from the shops. Like I almost always steal the best looking thing and then just get the hell out of there. Like I haven't
tried stealing yet, actually. That scared me, so I didn't bother trying.
It gets harder. Like the main denizen of each level is the shopkeep. So they're like a super hard version of it. I don't know if you can actually kill them, but as you move forward, like the ones in the second world are the lizard men that shoot fireballs, and the third world there's Starspawn of Cthulhu, so they're harder still. And but you can do it and get out of there. You just have a good exit strategy planned.
Yeah, that ended my first and best run. Was I was doing so well. I had a bunch of ammo. I had the med kit, which the med kit is like the compass for me. This game would be ridiculously hard if I didn't have the med kit, which if you die allows you to spend 50 MP essentially to revive. And so I just always, you know, will go to world one and get enough artifacts to have 50 MP at least. And then for the later levels, you know, I'll just grind up, 200 and go power through.
Right.
But I had the med kit. I had, I think, three revives, so over 150 mana. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to kill this guy and take everything because I'm feeling powerful. And he killed me once, and I got a couple hits, and I'm like, okay, I'll respawn, get a few more hits. He's got to be almost gone. Killed me again. I was like, okay, this time I've got him. I'm sure of it. And he killed me a final time, and I had to start over.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm curious if you can kill those guys. I could see for if they don't want you to, because he's got so much stuff.
Yeah,
right.
They take at least like 9 or 10 hits from the knife. So.
Yeah, good night.
And the screams of my rage towards my computer screen. So.
Yeah, I think Spelunky scared me off attacking shopkeepers. So.
Oh, what happens there?
In Spelunky, if you piss off one shopkeeper by trying to steal something, every shopkeeper on every level is angry at you and just runs after you with a shotgun. So,
yeah,
I was a little hesitant to give that a try, but now I know if I have an exit strategy, I can make off with an item.
Yeah, just get the fuck out of there, and you'll be right. Okay. Like the boot items are probably my favorite thing to steal if they don't have a compass. I don't need one. Like all the boot, like the speed boots are great.
Yeah,
it's really useful.
I like the stealth boots a lot because it allows you to kind of be much more aggressive.
Yeah, you can kind of play if you have the compass, you can make like a beeline. Like I watched a speed run of this game that was 10 minutes long. Like where,
oh, nice.
And you can't just go to the last, you know, last world to beat it. Like you have to do every world. And right. So I watched a speed run of it. So you can do it really quick, but if you want to, you can play it stealthily. It's tricky because your ears can't be trusted. So you, a review that I read compared that sound design bit to knowing there's a spider in the room, but not knowing where it's at, which I think is really apt. Like you
which
just
is
hear,
hilarious.
And you're just like, well, something somewhere. Fuck.
The funny thing I just realized is the only enemy that reliably has pretty local sound is the spiders.
Yeah.
Like if you hear the spider, they're pretty reliably close by. Right. Everything else though, it's like having a spider in there.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Voice is scary. It's fucking screaming worms. Like how many times they've never hurt me. I just like walk around the corridor and just have this screaming worm in my face.
Yeah.
Like
I jumped out of my chair the first time I killed one of those.
Yep.
Well, while we're on the topic of enemies, the friggin' statues that Spooky Watson you.
Yeah, those things.
The Weeping Angel style.
Yeah, I've never been able to successfully, like, other than, those things, I've never really been able to quite deal with them. I know that they, you know, I understand the rules that they follow. Like, you just have to be watching them, and you have to put a wall between you and them. But it seems like there's, you know, some aspect, you know, and when I eventually turn around, there's some angle I'm not considering.
Yeah, and they caught some glance of you and end up around the next corner.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get around those guys.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how the rule works. It's something like you said, like if they activate in line of sight of you, you have to keep them in your view until you break line of sight with them. But even then, you can't like walk back through with your back turned. Like once they're on and they will always attack you.
Yeah.
It's like a boo, you know? You have to be looking or else.
Well, and you never want to be like some of the tensest moments I've had, like they're only introduced in World 2, like mercifully, we're running into one of those things, backing away from it, and then you're backing into the unknown at that point.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible spot to be in. Like I can't take my eyes off this thing, but in my ears I'm hearing all kinds of, you know, noises in the background. Like what am I running into without knowing it? Yeah, like this game was very successful as far as like action scares. Like it's not so much atmospheric, but like jump scares and tension, you know, without there being any, like kind of ironically for a Lovecraft game, like no psychological element to it. Like,
right.
Like they just gave that away, but it's just there's something creepy going on. There's something creepy there, not something creepy going on.
It's got kind of a claustrophobic element to it in that like you can hear everything all the time. So it always sounds like something's right on you. The levels are, they're not huge, but, you know, they're there, it's a series. It's what, a 4x4 grid, or no, it's bigger than that.
It's, yeah, it's bigger than that. Yeah. And they're not distinct rooms. Like, the map looks like a Zelda map where it has distinct rooms, but they're not delineated.
But you could run from one side to the other if you had a straight line in probably 10 seconds.
But yeah, like, there's depth though. So each level is, you know, three or four layers deep.
But it's, you know, so it's very easy. You're going to have a lot of moments, like you said, where you're running into stuff unintentionally just because there's a lot of stuff packed into a small space.
Which is the good form of jump scare. Yeah. Like, you accidentally running into something as opposed to something purposely scripted.
Right, like a triggered, into your screen. Yeah, exactly.
They took my camera control away. I'm going to get a jump scare.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a naturally occurring jump scare. There's a little bit of that atmosphere. Like, when you get into the third world, there are deep ones that are non-aggressive that just stand up against the wall and bash their heads into it.
Oh yeah.
Like, while moaning, which is pretty unnerving.
Oh, which is even worse, because that disguises the sound of footsteps for everyone else.
Yep, exactly. They're just there to make like noise. Like, they're essentially like a trap that you just have to kill. And when you kill them, they yell, and that makes a noise too. So,
oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's what, maybe I've been setting them off and just haven't realized. Yeah. I was going to say, the only disadvantage, because they're like essentially little treasure chests, because you can kill them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, that's the other big thing that makes this game special. I don't know how we miss this. When you kill an enemy, you get the option to loot them, but they will respawn or leave the loot and they'll stay dead.
Yeah. I didn't even know that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought everything was just constantly respawning around me.
No. It's a really elegant solution to the idea of, like, I can either totally clear a level and have free reign, but I'm not going to have nearly as many items in it. Or I can, you know, try to YOLO it and just steal everything from every corpse, you know, and make it through. Yeah, it's really neat. Like, there are a lot of little neat design touches like that.
I was disappointed there weren't more difficult monsters that weren't invincible. So the toughest enemies from the third world take 4 shots if they're alerted to you. Oh, that's the other thing. Things will die faster if they're not aware of you. Like, something will die in one knife hit if they're not aware.
Yeah.
And will take 2 or 3 if they are. So you can, essentially, you get, you know, backstabs or stealth kills. But the most difficult killable enemies only take about 4, which, if you've been careful with your resources, is not too bad. Then the more powerful enemies, the statues and the slimes from World 1, are simply not killable.
Like,
I've not been able to deal with them. I wish there were more enemies that, like, hey, this thing will absorb 25 bullets, but you can kill it and it will have a great reward for you. Like, maybe it drops an actual
item.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I know this thing has a med kit or something like that, but that means it will respawn. Like, that would be a much more interesting choice. Whereas, like, I always loot the fish dudes because they're like stormtroopers. They're completely incompetent.
Yeah. Same thing with the cultists and stuff too. Like, the enemies are a factor. I mean, we should also mention just real quick that there are a lot of traps as well that you're going to be facing. So, like, that's the other thing. So the enemies are ultimately what's going to kill you, but it's not any one enemy usually. With the exception of World 2, like, those statues, when it doing it, you can blow them up. Like, that's the only way to kill them, but dynamite will blow them up.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
They act as masonry, so you can blow them up. But this is not an alpha, like, it's a completed game, but there is a December Christmas update coming out with a new world in it that will hopefully have new enemies and stuff that comes out soon. So by the time people are listening to this, it's already out, the update.
Yep.
So there's more value added to this game, you know, at that point. Do we have anything else to say about Eldric?
No, I think that's about it.
I like that everything in the game looks so cute.
Yeah.
Like, everything in this game would make a good plushie. And it still manages to be scary.
I didn't mention it too. Like, as much as it doesn't take very much from, like, Lovecraftian tone or anything, all of the monsters are accurate. So all of the things actually exist. Like, the hardest monster that Dennis was referring to is a flying polyp in the third, you know, that's like, everything actually is a monster. That slime thing is a Shoggoth. Like, so it has those little touches of verisimilitude. But they're just cutesy versions of it.
Yeah. Man, I would love a Deep Ones plush. Like, they're so cute.
They make a Deep Ones plush, dude. Like
no, I mean an Eldritch game, though.
Yeah, I want that too.
Yeah,
The regular one is fairly cute. I guess real quick, I mean, this could be a whole different podcast, but I just want to make a note that like people on the internet were dickheads and freaked out about the fact that the main character of this game is a lady.
Jesus Christ!
Which is the worst and dumbest Why? Thing. Because they were raised poorly. I don't know.
Was this the MRAs or whatever?
And just gamers. Yeah. Just some gamers dot texts.
Pittman responded, saying like I don't know what the exact comments that were being made were, but also his response where he said that he is a middle class white male, and he wanted his character to be everything but that.
Yeah.
And so he like
confirmed she's a lesbian.
Yeah. But yeah, so he made her and you can change your appearance anyway, so this is all dumb. But
oh, can you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's right, I remember, yeah.
The default look is a dark skinned female, and that's just what you start as. And why anyone would be upset about that is absolutely ridiculous.
Yep.
Yes. It has literally no bearing on.
Well, and why don't you want to play as a lady doing this cool stuff? You sexist monster? Like, it doesn't...
Yeah, how insecure in your own sexuality do you have to be that it intimidates you to even play as a character of the opposite gender?
Yeah. Well, and I guess, like, part of some of the response was from real hardcore Lovecraft enthusiasts, because Lovecraft doesn't really have lady protagonist. But, who gives a shit? Like, it's a video game. It's not...
Reed inspired by.
And Lovecraft was also, horribly racist for most of his life. And, like, there's a bunch of terrible things about Lovecraft. You don't have to subscribe to every little bit of him just because you like parts of his writing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, yep, yep.
Ugh. Okay, anyway. Let's cut to some very brief administration stuff.
Yep, and then a very brief space.
Yes.
So Dennis, what do you have to plug?
Yeah, so I am a member of the Duckfeed.tv network via a show called The Level, which is a show where we talk about video games. We've probably talked about Sir, You Are Being Hunted on two or three episodes. I actually brought up Eldritch as a news story before it was even released. So we kind of... Mostly we just dick around and have fun. It's a poker night between college friends. But we mostly focus on video games, the experiences we have playing them, the medium kind of developing as something that maybe can support art or does support art, not maybe. More so than reviews or industry news or anything like that. If you enjoy talking about video games, you have these conversations with your friends all the time. It's fun to kind of join those. We'll put up questions that people write in for. We kind of just cover a wide breadth of stuff related to video games.
Yeah, it's recommended.
Mm-hmm. And you can find me on Twitter at dfuria, which is D-F-U-R-I-A.
Indeed. As far as we go, for this show, please rate and review it on iTunes. That's a big help. Tell your friends if you like it.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, all that.
Yep, and listen to to our other shows. I do shows on the network. Just go to the shows page. I don't name all of them because I do a lot of them. Of interest to this specific program, though, probably around the same time this comes out, the Dungeons and Dragons episode of Watch Out for Fireballs is coming out, of which the part of it does feature Nick.
Yes, it does.
So listen for that. Listen to me, Nick, and Cole in the same room. Guest starring some other solid bros. So
agreed. All right, let's cut to spoiler space, and if you haven't played either of these games yet, take care, have a good one. If you have, stick around, and we'll talk about them a little bit more.
This is real brief. The only real brief spoiler thing. So Eldritch has, on the surface, has three levels. If you can complete the three levels all in one go, In one life, you unlock the fourth level, but it's kind of hard to get to. And it's actually the library that you're in when you're starting the game. So you can find a kind of a passage that leads, and you kind of continue to move up in it. So it is a kind of like a hidden last level of the game.
Neat.
Yeah. And notably, so it's not the actual space. Have either of you guys gotten there?
I haven't gotten there. I've only seen it.
Oh, okay. I've played through it. Do you mind if I?
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil anything for you guys.
No, go for it. I'm interested.
So it's not the space that you're in, which is really weird to me because that's what I expected. Because the kind of home world or hub world is this big giant library. You don't play in that. You go through the door that's behind the pedestals, and that opens up a new section of library, which is much more claustrophobic. Like the hub world library is pretty open. This is much more hallways, and it's much more maze-like than the other worlds. So, like you said, the other worlds, you know, you can kind of, they're not all discrete environments. They all kind of run together.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one, well, no, let me say that again. The best way to say it is basically in the other worlds, if you're consistently moving towards the exit. You know, if you have the compass, like if you're moving towards the exit sign, you can usually get there. In the library world, it's much more like a maze where just going towards the exit, you're going to run into walls and you have to kind of find your way through and kind of do a 3D maze through all the space.
Is it still randomly generated or is it still randomly generated?
It's just much more intricate. In addition, they have candle rooms, which I almost ignored and I'm glad I didn't, but they're extra hard to get to. So generally you have to do some sort of like, you know, drop down from above it on the other level or something like that. And light the candle and it doesn't do anything, at least apparently, until you get to the end. And I've only done it when I've lit all three candles and it says, hey, the candles you lit hold back the gods, and they go, you know, back to sleep, and you resign yourself to forever being the guardian of the library.
Oh.
So that's the quote unquote good ending. I'm guessing if you ignore the candles, either you can't open the final book or it tells you like the gods got out and you ruined everything. You know, something like that.
Right. In your attempt to leave the library, you fucked everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job, yeah. Jackass. Yeah.
Being a forever like the guardian of ancient libraries, Lovecraft is shit. So
yeah,
like,
yeah,
stuff being an eternal guardian of something.
Yeah. The other thing is, I've only been at once, but the final area that you have to go through to get to the book seemed to me like it was kind of like a level end, that it's always going to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a two level space where it's just open. There's a Shoggoth in it, which is that, you know, the slime monster that you can't kill and chases you really fast and kills you. There's a slime monster in it, and you can see into this from above, but there's no real cover or way to sneak around the monster.
Mm.
And then you can kind of climb up ladders around the side, get to the rafters, jump across the rafters, and get to the final book. And so the way that I solved it, and this was like the coolest moment, was I threw dynamite down onto the Shoggoth, which didn't hurt the Shoggoth, but it blew a hole in the floor that it fell through.
That's awesome.
Which, cleared my way, which is really cool. So I don't know if that happens every time or if there's always a Shoggoth in there, but it is kind of a big climactic end to it.
Yeah, very neat.
Yeah.
Oh, and just for continuity, we don't need to talk about it too much, but I think I said that I was going to talk about it in spoiler space. The end of the second world is a hallway full of those fucking statue things.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so, like, I teleported through it, like, just barely. Like, I still got tagged a couple times because once they see you, you know, at that point, my back is to them. So I barely got through with one life and managed to get that last orb or whatever.
But that's
it's fucking hard.
The only way I've ever done it is with the med kit and just sprint and take hits.
Yeah, invisibility would work too, I'm sure. But the you can't reliably get that. So cool.
All right. So I think that's about it, guys. Thanks, Dennis, for coming on and talking about these games with us.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The spoiler for the end of Sir, You're Being Hunted is that the game ends.
Oh, okay.
there's no like ending cutscene or anything. It's just like, you know, good, we're beaming you up now.
Yeah.
Bye.
Alpha. Yeah, Alpha. Congratulations.
Yeah, Alpha.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right.
Well, thanks everyone.
Yep, thanks everybody for listening.